On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Adam Gower to uncover passive investing via crowdfunding.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover passive investing via crowdfunding. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point, like what you hear, will give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. If you love what you hear, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from somebody who's going on nearly 40 years of experience inside of real estate. I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's absolutely passionate about this industry and also sharing what he knows with others. Today's Maverick, Adam Gower, is here with me. Adam, for the sake of the audience, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Right. So you already asked me where I'm from. So I can't tell you my usual joke again. So I'll just tell you exactly where I am from. So I'm originally from Northern England, a very, very long time ago. And my business today is basically we build crowdfunding platforms for commercial real estate sponsors so that investors can find opportunities online. That's basically it. Rather than going just to the crowdfunding platforms, you discover a sponsor, you want to be able to do some research on them. So we provide all that education for sponsors so that investors can research them and learn if, you know, somebody that they actually want to invest with.
That sounds great. Let's dive deep into that because I'm curious about what that means from both the general partner standpoint of having a crowdfunding platform, why you'd want to build your own. And then I'm curious about the limited partner side, about when they're looking at something, they're evaluating a deal inside of this platform. How does that look? And maybe in comparison to others. So maybe start on the GP side. Why would somebody want to build a crowdfunding platform of their own versus just go to one of the big boys that exists out there?
Well, first of all, if you go to one of the big boys that exist out there, you have got less than a 5% chance that they will take you on. And there aren't that many left. There's Equity Multiple, Realty Mogul, and CrowdStreet, basically. So I know them all very well. And they take a tiny proportion of people that actually come to them. So that's number one. Number two, there is a cost inherent with going on a platform, and that cost can be quite high. At the end of the day, you're looking at pushing 7-8% of the total raise for the life of a project, could be even more. So it gets to be expensive. Plus, the other thing is that you are not directly establishing a relationship with your own investors. Right. So a lot of our clients, and by the way, I'm not knocking the crowdfunding platforms. They are amazing resources for both passive investors and then also for sponsors and for the industry. I mean, they're kind of the backbone of the industry. But a lot of our clients who have usually had experience on one of the platforms. Mm. They are one of the 5% that made it through. And they realized the power of being able to raise capital from individual investors. And they want to do it themselves, right? They want to do it themselves. They want to be able to establish, meet and get to know investors directly without a middleman is a simple way of explaining it. Yeah. And so they come to us and they ask us to build, you know, I use the term crowdfunding platform, but really enhance their website and their online presence on social media and kind of the broader paid advertising world. They want us to enhance their presence online so that more individuals can discover who they are. And not only that, but give those investors out there the opportunity to research them without having to sit in a pitch meeting. Nobody wants to be pitched. Right. No one wants to sit in a two-hour pitch meeting over lunch anymore. You don't need to do that. You want to go to a website. You want to do your research on a sponsor. And so 99% of sponsors, professional real estate companies, they don't have any information that is worthwhile looking at on their website. Mostly, I mean, I kind of joke about it, but mostly because it was prohibited up until solicit investors, right, up until 2012, actually, the Jobs Act of 2012. And so they don't have sophisticated websites because they've never had any use for them until now. So that's what we build. We build highly educational websites tailored very specifically to individual sponsors, so that investors or prospective investors can do their own research in their own time and decide whether or not they want to invest.
Take me over to the limited partner side. You know, limited partners, oftentimes the old way is you meet somebody, you get referred to somebody, you knew somebody who invested in syndications, and that's how you got connected with things. And as you said, 2012, the Jobs Act changed a whole bunch of things. These platforms came to life. And today it's very different. You can go online and get just about everything, right? And so investing directly into a syndication is one of those things you can now get. From a limited partner's experience, what does that look like? What are the pros, maybe some of the cons associated with limited partners going through this a crowdfunding platform?
Yeah, these are really good questions, Neil. Thanks for asking. So I did tell you I've written a book, and I don't want this to be a pitch fest. I really don't. But I have written a book about this specifically for accredited investors that explains the pros and cons and exactly what crowdfunding is and why it's beneficial, really. But I'm going to address just 3 points to answer your question now. The benefits, the two primary benefits, and there are many primary benefits, but two of the primary benefits that are really kind of underappreciated are transparency and anonymity. So I'll deal with those in reverse alphabetical order, or reverse order, comma, also coincidentally alphabetical. Anonymity. So the beauty of crowdfunding, of advantage for a passive investor of investing or thinking about investing with a sponsor or in real estate as a limited partner, is that you don't have to sit with a sponsor and be pitched. You don't have to meet them. You don't have a connection anymore. You can do research online. You can find a sponsor and you can research them anonymously. It's fantastic. You don't have to have any. It's such a safe place to start your investing journey. If you're going to have a look at a particular asset class or region, whatever it happens to be, you don't have to sit there in front of somebody and be pitched. You can do it quietly in the background. You can use your phone, you go to YouTube, you can use your computer, however you want, you can do research. So anonymity is a big deal, right?
Right.
And then once you have gained confidence in a sponsor that, okay, this person is somebody that I am confident, I am favorably inclined to trust them, then you can sign up to their newsletter or to their database or whatever and start to get communication directly from them. Even then, you're going to be passive. You're going to be receiving emails, and there's always, they're doing it, if the sponsor's doing it right, it's always going to be an unsubscribe button. So you can always leave if you don't like what you hear. Right. And then if you're lucky, the sponsor will eventually say, hey, we've got a deal. Why don't you take a look at this deal? Now you can have a look at that in the confidence that you know who it is that you're dealing with. You've established a one-way relationship with them. They don't know who you are. And now you can actually engage them if you want, by email or by phone or however you want to. But they don't have to go through. They can rest assured that they don't have to go through the whole pitch, background, track record, because you already know it. You don't even want them to do that. Just tell me about the deal. So anonymity is a huge benefit. Sure. The second thing is, you actually said this word, actually interesting. I'm not sure why you said it. It's very prescient of you though, Neil, is the term transparency. Mm. Now, the way that it used to work is that, exactly as you said, you used to have to meet somebody, get a referral. The cliche is the country club, right? You'd have to join the country club. And that really is literally how it worked. You join a country club, not just to play golf or tennis, whatever you like to play, but because of the other high net worth people that you would meet there and the business opportunities that would develop from it, including potentially meeting a real estate sponsor in your city who you get to know and who would then pitch you, right? You get to know them in person. And then they'd say, I got a deal at the corner of Walk and Crosswalk. And are you interested? And then you'd have to go in and you'd sit at a table and they would pitch you and give you a paper, deal memo, or whatever it happens. I know this, by the way, I've done this 1,000 times throughout my career. I've raised over $500 million in equity throughout my time. And it was all this way. This is how you did it. The problem with that, and by the way, the reason it worked that way was because the laws prohibited what's called general solicitation. So I'll just simplify that just briefly. But general solicitation basically means advertising, that you would tell somebody, you would announce to somebody you didn't already know that you had a deal they could invest in. Up until 2012, that was illegal. Couldn't advertise. After 2012, you could. And so what that meant was that across the country, you had all these pockets of high net worth individuals. Just, I mean, again, just oversimplifying it. But basically, if you think of all the country clubs around the country, right, there they were. And they were kind of isolated little pockets that never really communicated and certainly didn't communicate about what real estate sponsors were doing. But so as an investor, as a passive investor, as an LP, all you could know about what market standards for investing in a real estate deal was what you learned at the country club from one guy, maybe from two guys. If they told you an 8 pref, an 8 preferred return is a good pref, and an 80-20 or 70-30 or 50-50 split or a 5 pref or whatever it was, whatever they told you, you had no way of benchmarking that.
No basis.
Because everything, these were just these isolated pockets around the country. So the second profound benefit that emerged for limited partners, and I think there's 8. Again, it's in my book, Crowdfunding, whatever. I forget what it's called even. I've written so many books. But the second benefit that I'm discussing today is this idea of transparency. So that when it became legal to advertise, what that meant was sponsors nationwide suddenly started putting their offering documents online. Oh my goodness me, what does that mean? That means now, instead of only being able to derive information from one person, now you can go online and you can see everybody's deals. So now you can benchmark a deal against the market. And so that's created a much leveler playing field for investors. Now, you can tell I can talk for hours, can't you? You did ask me what are the downsides. So let me just finish up with one of the profound downsides, really, really important one. What we do is digital marketing. We are marketers. That's what we do. So we help sponsors communicate with prospective investors and help them establish those relationships, right? But I come from a real estate background. I've been in real estate since a very, very long time, since actually the early 1980s. I don't like to say how long because it just betrays how old I really am, which I don't like to do. But anyway, that is my background. We only take on clients who we know are going to be successful, who have multi-cycle experience, and who, frankly, who we trust. I have to have a good feel for somebody before we take them on as a client. However, there are people who have come into this market of real estate investing who are really good marketers, but who really know nothing about real estate. And so it can be very seductive. Objective of marketing is, I'm going to use this word, and I don't mean it to be crass or rude in any way, manipulative, but the goal of marketing is to seduce people into buying. And marketing can be very, very seductive. And so you have these marketers who are able to create extremely seductive materials, but the foundation, the real estate foundation upon which that material is based, is utterly flawed. And it's very difficult for a limited partner to be able to pass the difference between a true professional real estate investor, a professional real estate operator, and somebody that really doesn't know what they're doing, but who is really good at marketing, unfortunately. But what I will tell you, and I'll finish up this thought, unfortunately, I'm going to say for better or for worse, but mostly for worse, as the market goes down now, you're going to find out. That's what's going to happen.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Find out the hard way. Is there a series of questions? I'm wondering, from a limited partner standpoint, when they're trying to discern the difference between good and bad, or good and evil, perhaps, is there a series of questions? Does somebody's, maybe it's a hallmark of success, they're looking for their history, how long they've done this, how many full cycle deals they have done. And it sounds to me like when you've said we only take a certain amount of people, people have done multiple full cycle deals, that's a hallmark for you to go, these people are more likely than somebody who may be brand new, for example, or hasn't done what you require. That's indicative of success, or more true earnest operator.
Okay. Yeah. So, Neil, also an exceptionally good question. So there are three things that I've written down to answer your question. The most important thing is to look for an alignment of interest. So an alignment of interest, simply stated, is that if the deal goes bad and you lose money, will the sponsor lose money with you? That's like boiling it down to where it's, that's it. And the way to do that, and there are some shortcuts for doing this, but the way to do that is, unfortunately, you got to go through the offering documents, those 80,000 word documents that are all legalese, and search for, but it's actually not that difficult to do. Just run searches for some key terms. One, fees. Look for the fees. So we've had sponsors that we have turned away as potential clients who have come in and told us proudly that they have, there was one particular sponsor that wanted us to work with them who told me that they were raising 50 million equity on a deal and they had put in 4 million of their own money. So I thought, all right, that's real money, right?
Right.
But when I got into the offering documents and had a look at it, their going in fees, their deal fee, their due diligence fee, their acquisition fee for the asset, it all amounted to over the $4 million. I think it was $5 million. So in fact, it was the investors who were giving the money to the sponsor who was, in theory, putting it into the deal.
Right.
And the sponsor was pocketing another million. Another thing to look at is an acquisition and a disposition fee.
Disposition fee. Yep.
So look for disposition fees. Okay, that's okay. It depends, though. Are they just layering it on top of broker fees the deal is going to spend anyway? Number one. And number two, what happens if the deal fails and they sell it? Are they still going to get that fee? If you don't make your money back, are they still going to get that fee? So there you've got, there, that's indicative of a sponsor who is motivated by fees and isn't motivated to protect your capital, number one, or really to make money. Yeah, they'd love to have the gravy from the promote, but they're also motivated by fees. So that's number one. Number two, exactly what you said as well, multi-cycle experience. How long have you been in this? If somebody says, oh, I've been doing this for 10 years, that doesn't mean that they can't do it well. It just means that they've got no clue what happens during a down cycle. They have never had a hard lesson. They've not been through it. And so they are likely to be more aggressive on assumptions. They're going to take on greater risks and they're going to overpay in all likelihood for deals, which is okay if the market keeps going up. But if there's a downturn, as we're having right now, they're going to lose their shirts and going to lose your money. And the third thing, a good question to ask is, what failures have you had? Like, when have you lost money? And if a sponsor tells you, we've never lost money, take that with a grain of salt. You really want to know what have been your hardest lessons? And I think I saw, didn't you interview Joel Friedland?
Absolutely.
You did, didn't you? Yep. So Joel is a good friend. And Joel, I don't want to betray his trust or anything, but I know Joel very well. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. And one of the first things that he tells people when you sign up on his website is, I think the first email that comes out is, this is why you shouldn't invest with me. It's a crazy thing. And he tells you about his biggest failure and how he lost money. That is important because people like that understand. They've been through it. They've had the hard lesson. And now they're more conservative. They don't want to lose money again. Those are good indicators for what to ask of sponsors.
You said earlier on, you know, one of the ways that the market will reveal itself is you're going to see sponsors losing. And the reality of the economic churn that we're in right now is there's distressed real estate in the marketplace. I know you've got a particular exposure to a whole bunch of distressed real estate. Maybe talk a little about what you're seeing in the world of distressed and how people are participating in distressed real estate today.
Okay, so the markets at the moment, it is a slow motion train wreck. It is unlike the global financial crisis of the 2008 and on. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. And I won't get into, unless you really want me to compare the two. But what's happening this time, unlike the last time, which was unpredictable and kind of out of control, nobody really knew what was going on. And everybody thought the system was going to collapse. It was very, very frightening. This time is different than that, because this is a managed downturn. You got the Feds actively increasing rates to slow the pace of the economy. And you've got regulators who are telling banks, don't mark to market. You don't need to take all your losses at once, which essentially would happen if they insisted everyone did mark to market. They're encouraging banks to extend. There's no pretension here. Extend and pretend is mischaracterization of the approach. This is an extension to flatten the downturn. It does not mean that the downturn will be any less severe than the global financial crisis, at least for commercial real estate. But what it means is it's going to be a slow descent. That's why I say slow motion train wreck. Mm-hmm. It's a slow descent. And that means that opportunities on the flip side, right? It's kind of wealth transfer period. Right. Opportunities are going to be evenly distributed over time, unlike the global financial crisis, where boom, it was the whole world collapsed, right? Of commercial real estate. And there was this massive flood of distress. And I know because I was involved on the bank side or private equity side of that. So what we're seeing now are the early signs of that. What you're seeing, and maybe some of your listeners, right, feeling this already. The first sign is distribution stop. Actually, a really good sponsor, this is actually something that we're working on with our clients at the moment, will signal to you that distribute. The first sign will be they will signal to you that distributions are stopping, not just tell you, right? So they will explain what's going on. The second sign are capital calls. That's when it's starting to get really hairy.
Yes.
And the third is when they actually lose assets. Either they're forced to sell to cover debt, or they lose assets to the bank. So what we're seeing at the moment are the early signs. Distributions are stopping. There's more capital calls. Of course, there are some high visibility failures as well. You know, there's some fraud that starts to get exposed when the market goes down.
Right.
Those are the early signs, some big failures. And you're going to start over the next, where are we now? August. So throughout the end of the year into Q1, Q2 of next year is when you're going to start seeing more and more failures, and more banks will start divesting of notes, the mortgages that are underwritten by commercial real estate assets.
Do you think through the cycle of the progressive downturn that you'll see the banks moving notes off their books, or do you think they'll get to a point where they're just going to be taking assets back and then it's going to be a sale of assets at that point? Assets meaning the real property.
Yeah. So because look, when a bank will sell a note, if it's a troubled loan, a bank will sell a loan if it doesn't take a loss on the loan. Banks aren't in the business of owning real estate. I was brought into a bank in 07. I sold my portfolio right before the collapse of the global financial crisis. And one of my clients was on the board of a bank, and they'd done a lot of lending, a huge amount of real estate collateralized lending. And so they brought me in. And I totally forgot where I was going with that. So I lost my train of thought. So they are not in the business of owning real estate. Actually, what I was going to tell you is an anecdote. So we did take some loans back as REO. And it's really tough. One example was we took a hotel back. And so we put this thing into the foreclosure process. And as we got close to the day that we were actually going to take this back as an REO, real estate owned by the bank, suddenly started thinking, wait a minute, this isn't an empty building. This is a hotel.
It's an operating hotel.
I need to serve muffins and coffee in the morning and change sheets. It's, oh my goodness. So we had to like do triage. I had to bring in the, remarkably, there are companies that do that.
Correct.
Almost literally, not parachute, but they drop teams of people into hotels to manage them for banks until they're actually able to sell them. It's like, who would think of like, oh, that's the job I want. I come up with that idea. But we found them and that's what we did. So that's what you're going to see. You're going to see note sales provided the discount isn't too much. And if the bank thinks they can do better with REO, they'll take it back and then sell them, hopefully for less of a discount than they could have done selling the note. That's the falling sword cycle, by the way.
Wow. Okay. Let's do this. I'm going to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. Tell me, what do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that next level happens to be?
In passive investing?
Yes.
I can tell you what holds me back.
Yeah.
And that is fear of loss, frankly, is not being prepared to not having the confidence in your own abilities to underwrite and understand a risk, which actually my ability is extremely high, but not having the confidence in that and being motivated or being driven more by fear of loss than by acceptance of enjoying the gain. I think that for me anyway is the biggest.
How do you get over that? Certainly you have passed that at certain points in your life. You have taken action sooner or later.
Right? Yeah, I get over that. I play the lottery every week. That's how I get it. No, I'll tell you actually how I'm...
What I hear you say is small risk for large gain.
Well, yeah, you know, that's never going to happen, but I still do really play the lottery. I consider it my retirement plan. But I'm different because this is my world. I am a real estate investor.
That's right.
A real estate professional. So in my world is to actually move back to the sponsor side.
The active side.
And to control... I don't mind putting my entire net worth into real estate, and most of it is anyway, but to actually really concentrate it.
Yeah.
If I am managing that process, then if I lose everything, I only have me to blame. I'm not relying on anybody else, and I'm not going to lose everything.
Part of that difference, your fear and then how you overcome it, that's probably, I suspect, because you're so close and you know that you have such intimate knowledge of real estate.
Well, really, the reason is that I've seen and experienced downturns so personally. The first one, the early, the 1990s savings and loan, I went into the savings and loan as an LP with considerable wealth and that was wiped out. So that was the first thing. And I saw from inside a sponsor what can go wrong and how the house of cards can just collapse.
Yeah.
And then during the global financial crisis, I was lucky to have sold out before the crisis. And then I went into the bank and I ended up at a private equity shop. And I dealt with so many failed deals and sponsors across every asset class across the entire country that it just, it made me gun shy.
Yeah.
All I can see is this is how a deal can fail. And you forget that you are balancing risk with returns and you are balancing it. I'll tell you something. I know that you're wrapping up, but I'll give you an example. So we did an investor call recently, a large number of, we have a lot of investors in our network. And we did a private investor call recently. One guy came on and he said, I have done 30, 40 passive investments. And we are involved in two that are catastrophic failures. Both of them very, very public. I won't mention them just to be discreet, but two very public failures. Total loss. And I asked him, all right, overall though, out of all your investments, are you ahead? Like, are you wiped? And he said, no, overall, because of my diversification strategy, having gone into so many deals, yeah, I've taken 100% losses on two deals, but overall, I'm actually still ahead. So there are ways of mitigating risk, even for people like me who are afraid of our own shadows sometimes.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
I have been asked that recently, and I actually, this is probably sounds a bit salesy, but I don't mean it, but I really like helping people. I actually really, really like helping people and teaching people. I get an enormous amount of joy out of that. I learned that I like doing that when I got a PhD, actually, Neil, because it gave me the confidence to teach. And then I realized, I really like that. And I don't mean classroom teaching. I just mean sharing my experiences and knowledge and insights and getting positive feedback from people. Oh, that's really helpful. Thank you. I really like that.
Yeah.
It's a really good feeling.
No, it's terrific. What's your favorite book?
Does it have to be a business book? Can I share something that's not
any book?
I love P.G. Woodhouse, Jeeves, and Bertie Wooster books. It's like, if you buy them all, it's like as big as my screen wide. There's thousands of pages. They are the most brilliantly written books in the English language, incredibly funny, very well written. The characters are extremely intellectual, but in an extremely humorous and funny way. I really like those books. But I should tell you something a little bit more profound as well. If you want a book that is good for the world that we live in, probably Ogilvy on Advertising is a good one as well. So
great book, classic.
Right. Okay.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
You're asking me some interest. I give a lot of money to charity, actually. So I do voluntary work. In fact, I've spent probably far too much voluntary work in my life. So I've done that. And so I've given a lot of time. And I also write a lot of checks to 501c3s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a great conversation. You are an absolute wealth of knowledge. I'm sure I could ask you, and I'm sure you could go on for hours. And so we're going to have to do this again sometime real soon. For people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where can they go? What should they do?
Thank you. So really the best way to get a hold of me is to go to my website. That's gowercrowd.com, G-O-W-E-R. My last name, gowercrowd.com, and sign up for my newsletter. It goes out every Wednesday. It's free, and we cover the world of real estate syndication and crowdfunding. At the moment, with a focus on distressed real estate. We're staying close to that story, if you like, or that trend, because we think there are going to be some good opportunities coming up in the next few months.
Terrific. The link will be below in the show notes for everybody. Adam, I appreciate you so much. Wonderful to have a conversation with you. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. It was all mine, Neil. Thank you for having me.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.